What's up from Burbank, California? Welcome back. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Write That Down on the Fight Game Media Network. I'm Justin Nipper. I edit for FightGameMedia.com, staff writer, F4W Wrestling, Observer Online.com. I also work for Pro Wrestling NOAH, and I'm back with Japan's leading pro wrestling author, historian, and broadcast journalist, Mr. Fumi Saito, as always. This week, we focus on the dragon, Tatsumi Fujinami, one of the most important junior heavyweights in pro wrestling history, the man that brought the tope from Mexico to Japan, and from his junior heavyweight career into his storied and very unique and interesting heavyweight career as the star he became. The dragon himself, Tatsumi Fujinami. If you have not already, please subscribe to the Fight Game Media Network podcast feed on Spotify, Apple, wherever you usually listen to your podcast. Please, it helps us out very much. All right, let's get into the dragon, Tatsumi Fujinami.
Tatsumi Fujinami.
Yes.
Just had his 50th year anniversary show against today's superstar legend, Hiroshi Tanahashi. It's like, wow, it's kind of like Ric Flair wrestling, like today's superstar. Who would that be? Hiroshi Tanahashi against somebody like Seth Rollins or Roman Reigns or John Cena, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And Tanahashi always said that Fujinami was one of his number one kind of idols or favorite wrestlers or people he looked after.
Yeah.
Somebody he wanted to be like.
Yeah, because probably Antonio Inoki is kind of almost too far away, right? Old enough to be his father. But the Fujinami was somebody that he grew up watching on Channel 10, TV Asahi, Friday night, primetime wrestling, all his childhood. Yeah.
And I feel like they have similar attitudes when they're in the ring. They're always a baby face.
Always baby face. Never seen them heel.
And
not once.
Tanahashi did his thing, but it was a different time, so that's a different.
Sure.
But in general, that pure, we call it white bread, white meat, baby face.
Oh, yeah. And also bread and butter, we call it, because he never had fancy costume, always has short trunks.
That's right.
Nothing written on it, just black trunks, black wrestling shoes. Ring jacket, you know, like a fancy ring jacket or pink jacket or silver jacket, other things. But in ring, always had this black short trunks, not even the knee pads, you know.
All business.
Boots. Yeah, yeah. And never permed his hair. He always had this Fujinami hairdo.
Mm-hmm. The swoopy-doo. He looked like he was Antonio Inoki's little
brother, like little a mini brother. Inoki or lowercase Inoki or something, right?
Sure. I mean, it was all they had a lot of the. It's interesting because they had a lot of the same characteristics, but they were very different at the same time. It's just no nonsense in the ring,
like
same
a straight
look.
Wrestler, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also, New Japan was a type of company. All through 50-year history, that a lot of wrestlers come and go, right?
Mm.
You know, that the Riki Choshu's faction, that the Masa Saito era, that, you know, like people like Killer Khan, like Rasha Kimura, Elmo Hamaguchi, the international, you know, that Japanese heel faction thing, and other things, you know, like a strong machine, super strong machine, or UWF guys, Maeda, Takada, Fujiwara, you know, the different faction, that they were there, but they left. They came back and left again, but the Fujinami was always there, right next to Inoki. That's something, right?
It changed. We'll talk about it later, but it changed when Fujinami hurt his knee and before Inoki came out. That relationship is a defining one, I think.
Yeah,
in Fujinami's career.
Fujinami became a heavyweight IWGP champion,
mm-hmm.
and also he became his own man. Yeah.
Yeah, he followed in his footsteps, but things changed. It's not exactly the same as Inoki's path,
Right.
but
Let's rewind the tape, go all the way back to where he started. Mm-hmm. He was born 1953, and right now he's 68, and his birthday is December 28th, so he turned 69 this year. You know?
Wow. And he still looks. I mean, he doesn't look
pretty,
69.
Yeah, not bad though. Yeah, yeah. And also, he's been wrestling since he was age 17.
So, majority of his life, he's spent wrestling.
Yeah. And he was born in Oita Prefecture. And there was a wrestling in his nearby, but some 30, 40 miles away from his home. He took bicycle, you know, to the show and met with Motoyuki Kitazawa, Inoki's right-hand man, that met him, like a ninth grader. Fujinami, you know, told Kitazawa that I want to be a wrestler. Well, come to Tokyo. There's nowhere from Oita for this ninth grader to come to Tokyo, right? And I want to be a wrestler. They just had to go to the show and tell somebody that he was going to be a wrestler when he was 15.
Was anybody other than Inoki, was he inspired by anybody else when he was growing up? Because, you know, he started out as a junior. So he had to develop a sort of different approach, different style.
Yeah,
when he started
he was a young lion before there was a young, term young lion. Well, actually, Fujinami debuted with Japan Pro Wrestling, Nippon Pro Wrestling, not New Japan. That, of course, Inoki was still there. In 1971, May 9th to be exact, when he was 17, the very first match was against Motoyuki Kitazawa, where he met, Inoki's right hand man. Inoki, it's up to debate, but December of 1971, Inoki was either fired by Nippon Pro Wrestling or he walked out. He was going to change the company, look into the bookkeeping, and something was wrong, and he was going to change the company. Instead, Yoshino Sato fired him or something. You know what I'm saying? That all in all, Antonio Inoki formed New Japan Pro Wrestling March of 1972. And Inoki initially had only four wrestlers: Antonio Inoki, Kotetsu Yamamoto, Osamu Kido, and 17-year-old Fujinami. Then two wrestlers, who was traveling in Mexico at the time, Motoyuki Kitazawa and Katsuhisa Shibata. Katsuhisa Shibata is the father of Katsuyori Shibata.
That's right. He would become a pretty regular New Japan referee for years.
Yeah, he retired early and became referee. But started out four wrestlers. Two wrestlers from Nippon Pro Wrestling came back and joined Inoki. That was Inoki's guys. So Kitazawa and Shibata. So six guys all together. It was a small office in the same Noge Dojo that they have still to this day. That was Inoki's house. That the first thing Inoki did is to, to build the gym, building the dojo on his land, on the front yard, of his house, that the way he was living with Mitsuko Baisho, the famous actress at the time. And he fixed his house, they made it into dojo and the house where all the young talent could join, pretty soon people like, Yoshiaki Fujiwara, the Kuniaki Kobayashi, or, Satoru Sayama, all these people come in, Don Arakawa, Masanobu Chris, all these people start coming in and to, try out. I mean, it's off the track, but people like, Tetsuo Sekigawa or Hamada, later on becomes Grand Hamada, and Sekigawa becomes Mr. Pogo later on. Isn't that interesting?
Even these people, Masakazu Funaki.
Oh, no, Masakazu Funaki doesn't come in till 84.
Oh, we're talking about right at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, not just in general. Okay, so yeah, right at the beginning.
Yeah, I only had six wrestlers, and all these, like a 25-year-old Fujiwara wanted to become a wrestler and joined. 16-year-old Kuniaki Kobayashi come in and, he became like a dojo trainee. And people like Masanobu Chris, Don Arakawa, all retired, and some of them are gone now. But the very beginning of New Japan Pro Wrestling, that the first thing Inoki did was to build dojo in his home. then Carl Gotch come in and start training younger guys. You know, then of course Fujinami was like Carl Gotch's favorite student. Oh yeah, Masakatsu Funaki, Akira Maeda, Nobuhiko Takada, they don't come in until 80s.
Right, no. Later on.
Yeah, but Grand Hamada and Mr. Pogo was a New Japan student too. Isn't that weird?
You wouldn't expect it, but that's right.
Yeah, yeah. But what Inoki did very first was to build a dojo. You know, I wanted to start New Japan Pro Wrestling from the scratch. And people didn't expect Fujinami to be a big star later on, this skinny 17-year-old rookie, you know. Like, he's basically carrying Inoki's suitcase.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Hmm.
Yeah. So he re-debuted with New Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, when he was 17, he had red trunks and red wrestling boots. He was already throwing pretty mean dropkick when he was 18.
Pretty high energy wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. Because when I went to watch, when I was like fifth grade, you know, I went to watch Inoki against Carl Gotch single match. Mm-hmm. Fujinami was on like a second match. Yeah.
Do you remember who he wrestled?
God, I wish I did. But he was already like a American, you know, the American wrestler. So he got beat. Yeah. And the second time I saw him was the following year. I was sixth grade. Inoki Sakaguchi against Carl Gotch and Luthes tag match, historical mm-hmm. tag match. Yeah. And Fujinami worked a single match and younger guys battle royal. And he was the last person on the battle royal. Young Kengo Kimura backslided him and got, you know, the Fujinami got pinned. That's how I remember. Anyhow, there was such thing as Carl Gotch Cup, much like your Young Lion, you know, tournament. This, you know, do they have a Young Lion tournament still?
Yeah, they're still doing it. I don't think they did it this year. But they've done it recently. They do it.
Right, right. So before there was Young Lion Cup, there was a Carl Gotch Cup. And very first Carl Gotch Cup was December 8th, 1974. The finalist of first inaugural, the first annual Carl Gotch Cup was Tatsumi Fujinami against Masashi Ozawa. You know Masashi Ozawa was?
No, tell me, who is Mr. Ozawa?
Killer Khan later on.
Ah.
Isn't that interesting?
Did he look the same? Did he have the size?
Didn't have that hairdo. Okay. Just a big, big former sumo guy. Yeah. I mean, it was huge for Japanese rookie, right?
Mm-hmm.
But before he was Killer Khan, he was Masashi Ozawa, and that was Ozawa against young 21-year-old Fujinami was the final of first annual Carl Gotch Cup. Mm. He won the tournament. When you turn, you know, it's much like your Young Lions Cup, you know, Young Lions tournament later on. That when you win the rookies tournament, what we'll be doing is that you will be sent to overseas. Yeah.
So, and I was going to ask, when did he, because I know they sent him over to Mexico for a little bit.
First, he went to Europe.
Okay, he went to Europe first. Where did, all over Europe, but UK, Germany?
Yeah, Germany and Austria, you know, like where they have.
Arovans?
Like Arovans and the person before that. Arovans bought that from, like, you know, like Nicolas. Selenkovic or some European, you know, like a group of promoters in Europe, they have sets of tournament, like a September tournament, October tournament, November tournament, from Bremen to Hanover to this Austria city West Germany, then German cities, you know, you sit there like a circus tent. You have the 30-day tournament in the same place every day, and wrestlers are staying in a trailer or something, you know, the camp, you know, parked right next to the tent, that kind of thing. And he spent, you know, his, you know, fall to winter in West Germany, then West Germany and Austria, he obviously trained, and he was sent to Mexico. Yeah, and there was like a young Fujinami, Ring Fujinami, then that against young Kanek, you know, was a very famous series of match, you know. Then he was sent to Florida. Of course, he spent time as Korogachi, right? From Florida, went to North Carolina, and just he pretty much worked Florida and North Carolina and a little bit in Los Angeles, you know, Mike LaBelle territory, then back to Mexico. And he actually spent like 3 years, 75, 76, 77. Yeah. And then January of 1978 at the Madison Square Garden, January 23rd of 1978, he beat Jose Estrada to become WWF Junior Heavyweight Champion. That's like a Cinderella story starts there.
And that belt, that title, that WWF title, it's kind of what you think of. You think of Tatsumi Fujinami when you bring it up, because he's the one who's most synonymous with it.
Yeah, then that was a very interesting time. That was the same, you know, same time that Bob Backlund beat Superstar Billy Graham to become WWE Heavyweight Champion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like a brand new era. Yeah.
And he would also start to show up at Madison Square Garden. And
yeah, just like every other
matches.
Month.
Yeah, yeah, he was
to defend
regular.
His title. Yeah, pretty regular.
For
WWF, yeah, at the time. And that really made this business partnership between New York, Vince McMahon Sr. and Antonio Inoki's New Japan Pro Wrestling made this business partnership even tighter.
When did people start calling Tatsumi Fujinami the Dragon?
Dragon? Right around this time.
So,
in like a Bruce Lee era. And his new finish was called Dragon Suplex, which was taught by Korogachi the previous year. That it's very similar to German Suplex, but it was a full Nelson. But some wrestlers do that today too, but the full Nelson into Suplex. You know, it's very dangerous, but if you do it perfectly, it's beautiful. So it was when a star is born, it's almost like a Cinderella story that you have your signature original finishing maneuver. For Fujinami, it was Dragon Suplex, that the full Nelson German suplex hold. And he won the title in New York City. It was televised in Japan, right from Madison Square Garden. It's like a same Friday night New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know, TBS TV show, but it was like all of a sudden a film came in from America, and a good 20-minute segment of the show, it's from New York City. It's Tatsumi Fujinami, the Dragon Fujinami. Oh, he had the name Dragon Fujinami in Mexico too. Yeah. So, but this New York sensational debut to become WWF Junior Heavyweight Champion was like so big in Japan that he came back as a star. 24-year-old Fujinami, you know, just almost like overnight sensation. But it's not like he was put in position. He was ready to, you know, to be in that position. Such a good wrestler, right?
He was believable, and I mean, he looked the part. He acted the part. That's what I think a lot of people would expect.
Yeah,
from
and also at the time, when you are, if you're a star in pro wrestling, it's basically you're a heavyweight guy, huh? But
that's right.
It really introduced the fact that there is another division, junior heavyweight division. And it made this, you know, almost like a New Japan Pro Wrestling in the two different cluster, right? 8 o'clock, you know, when you turn the TV, 8 o'clock, usually Fujinami comes in first. Then like an 8:30, Inoki comes out, you know, to be the main event. So it was like, you watch Fujinami before you watch Inoki. And yeah, it was like that. And junior heavyweight division gave a lot of, you know, like a male young wrestling fan in Japan that I want to do that. It's like people like Liger, people like Ultimate Dragon, you know, all these people watch Fujinami, and there's a chance that you be wrestler too. You don't have to be 250-pound guy to be a wrestler.
And I think Fujinami early on really put an emphasis on athleticism and
Oh, yeah, this is a junior
separated.
heavyweight, version of Fujinami was like no fat in his body whatsoever. He looks like not exactly bodybuilder, but so lean and muscly, but it's fast, And
And
the
kind
way
of
he did
reckless
that.
at times. In a, I mean that as a compliment about how fearless he was to just go through the ropes onto the floor or.
That's Poppe, right? Actually, Fujinami was the one who introduced Tope into Japanese market. He was the one.
He was the f wow.
First
That's
one in Japan.
that's well, I mean, you think about it, you see a Tope almost every show now.
Yeah, or like a WWE wrestler like a Seth Rollins or
Anybody,
they do that.
anywhere.
Or AEW, not Ambrose, I was gonna say, but Jon Moxley does that, and every single Japanese superstar in different different company, they all do that. It's n now it's Tope from Mexico, or even the people like Bret Hart, were doing that in his days, right? And it's called Tope, but the when Fujinami introduced Tope in Japanese market, and he was the first person, it was called Dragon
Dragon
Racket.
Rocket, that's right.
Dragon Racket. I was like, whoa, right? You dive onto people like Canek or Peragayo, or even did that to heavyweight Ivan Koloff or against Chavo Guerrero series of matches. And Chavo Guerrero Senior, Chavo Guerrero Classic was his big rival in junior heavyweight division. Anyway, that 78, 79, 80 into 81. So he had a long 3 year run as junior heavyweight champion.
And from 81, what when was
Tiger
80?
Mask comes up,
Ah, okay. Things
Yeah,
changed from
81.
there.
Yeah, 81 with the summer of 81, it was, Satoru Sayama, the original Tiger Mask era begins, and then it'll be Tiger Mask against Dynamite Kid, right? The best matches. But actually, Dynamite Kid had the program. Like Dynamite Kid had young Dynamite Kid then, like a 23-year-old Dynamite Kid, had series of matches against junior heavyweight champion Tatsumi Fujinami before he had those series of matches against Tiger Mask. There's the
And
videos.
people really should go out of their way to watch those,
Young Fujinami against young Dynamite Kid, junior heavyweight.
especially if you're a big fan of Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask matches. I mean, this is the prototype for that rivalry.
Before Tiger Mask era. Well, not that Fujinami was doing what Tiger Mask would do,
No.
like a move wise, but more of a
But the
Tiger.
pace, the
Fujinami
intensity.
was a more of a like a Karl Gotch style wrestler. Like you have a great mat wrestling and dynamic, some drop kick and topes and other things. But Fujinami was the definition of Japanese style junior heavyweight. And also, the Fujinami and Dynamite Kid had their the part of the series of matches up in Calgary too. And this then already old Stu Hart said that was the best wrestling match I've ever seen.
Whoa.
Of his 6 years in business? Oh my gosh, right? And that covers a lot of ground.
So, yeah, the Fujinami of the late 70s, early 80s was something to see, and
Right, but
different.
the when Tiger Mask, era started, he moved on to heavyweight division as of October of 81. So
October
he,
81.
yeah, October 81, he relinquished his junior heavyweight title, and now that the WWF junior heavyweight title goes on to Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid, that division, then heavyweight version of Fujinami era starts.
So was he featured in singles bouts when he was first
Yeah,
heavyweight or?
when he turned heavyweight, that was a time he would be having single match against like Andre the Giant,
Ah, okay.
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the single match against people like Dick Murdoch, single match against masked superstar Bill Eadie, and those the guy, obviously bigger than he is, but so he was more of like a Like more like a Ricky Steamboat type, smaller baby face.
Sure, yeah. And building him to, build up to that top position later on.
Oh, before we forget, while he was junior heavyweight, we always talk about WWF junior heavyweight title, right? He also had the junior heavyweight title called NWA International Junior Heavyweight Championship that they brought in that the young Steve Kern from Florida. And had a Fujinami against young Steve Kern years before he was Fabulous Ones. Okay, that's when NWA Florida Eddie Graham and Hiro Matsuda all opened a business relationship with New Japan. They switched sides. Previously, NWA Florida was working with Giant Baba's All Japan. Remember? And Eddie Graham and Hiro Matsuda switched sides from All Japan to New Japan and stopped bringing in Florida wrestlers into New Japan ring. That's what what happens with American Dream Dusty Rhodes start coming to New Japan and had a series of single match against Inoki around that time. Anyhow, so he had two sets of junior heavyweight title when he was junior heavyweight, NWA International Junior Heavyweight Champion, and also that the WWF junior heavyweight title. Interesting, huh?
He was a star, kind of just after those first couple of years. It was just from top of the card to superstar.
But had a good 3-year run as junior heavyweight champion. Then October of 1981, when Tiger Mask emerged, that he was a smaller but more like a veteran, like a little bit more matured, smaller but heavyweight division star. That means he had a single match against people like Inoki, Sakaguchi for the Madison Square Garden tournament situation. A single match against Andre, like I said, Dick Murdoch, masked superstar. A little bit later on, Fujinami against Jimmy Snuka or something like that. Then, 82, the fall of 82, Ricky Choshu came back from Mexico with long hair, turn on Fujinami. Then, 82, 83, 84, they had this phenomenal single match program that the Fujinami against Ricky Choshu. That pretty much complimenting each other. That made Ricky Choshu big, huge star, but the Fujinami was there for him, sort of. Because people love underdogs, right? And also kind of new to have complete Japanese heels.
It also was a good opportunity to show this different side of Tatsumi Fujinami. We didn't see some of these matches were pretty bloody. They wouldn't start for a long time because they'd be fighting around the ring. It was a very fiery, very intense version of Tatsumi Fujinami.
This it shows the new side of Fujinami. Yes, that's true. And also bringing Japanese heel faction, and like you have Riki Choshu, the Killer Khan, the Yoshiaki Yatsu, the Kuniaki Kobayashi, who was also Tiger Mask's rival. Animal Hamaguchi joins Isamu Teranishi. Is like pretty good size heel faction, and to make this thing so realistic, they never got on the New Japan babyface bus again. They had this block bus, like for the faction that Ricky Choshu stopped wearing this New Japan, tracksuit top and bottom. That he had their own T-shirt, they had their own, top and bottom jerseys, and was always staying in different hotel, always traveled separately, and always, staying American wrestlers, hotels and separated, and they never shared the dressing room again, and just super believable heel faction in Riki Choshu. But you needed complete 100% babyface Fujinami in that picture. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, he was the perfect guy for that position.
And Fujinami is like in his 50-year career. Technically, it's a 51-year because he debuted 71, right? It's 2022, so it's actually 51-year already. It's actually Yoshiaki Fujiwara's 50 years. And it's like a sidetrack, but the Fujiwara's debut match was against Fujinami, actually.
It's hard for me to envision Yoshiaki Fujiwara as a young man, because I feel like he's
He looks
looked
like that though, you know?
he's looked like he looks now for a very
Yeah,
long time.
when he was younger too.
When he was
And
young, he
also,
looks old. Just his look.
you know, number one student of Carl Gotch, you know, never complained. Yeah, so he was also wrestler's wrestler, because Fujinami is a good looking young guy, you know, and he was always like had a star look. yeah
Very much so. He looks like a movie
yeah
star, like
yeah
a Bruce Lee
but
kind of
this
thing.
long hair Japanese heel, but the people loved him. That the Rikki Choshu against Fujinami was really great. Actually, those 3 year program, 82, 83, 84, that's when Inoki was like really slowing down too, actually, and took tour off here and tour off there. That if you remember that the 1983 first annual IWGP tournament final, 29-year-old Hulk Hogan beat Inoki for the final, and Inoki was hospitalized and all these things. And it's hindsight that a lot of people said a lot of things about that. Inoki was never hurt; he just decided to lay there. But he actually was hurt in a lot of different places in his body, and he was slowing down. And yeah, Inoki couldn't carry this whole tour, you know, like a 200 dates a year, you know, thing that the Rikki Choshu and Fujinami became main event program. So it's like things are like internal and external sometimes, you know, happen simultaneously. That the Inoki couldn't carry his single one-man show main event in New Japan Pro Wrestling, then Fujinami and Rikki Choshu was ready to be their main event.
Would you say that Choshu and Fujinami had maybe the first big Japanese versus Japanese rivalry?
I guess so, because all Japan side, that the Jumbo Tsuru against Tenryu wouldn't happen until like 88, 89, you know what I'm
Sure,
saying?
yeah, a bit later.
And also, like, rewind the tape a little bit, Inoki against Strong Kobayashi, the Inoki against Kintaro Oki, it's like a one-time deal, you know what I'm saying?
Sure, yeah.
So it's not like all year long. Maybe Russia Kimura against Antonio Inoki, you know, was a perfect opponent,
Although
or a
those
little
felt
bit.
like outsider versus home
Right,
team
because
type of
they were the
programs.
stars from then defunct IWE company, you
So
know.
it had a different it was still had like a outsider invader feeling.
Very much so. But the Rikki Choshu, everybody knew that he went to Olympic in 72. He was Golden Rookie with New Japan, but didn't really hit it until this
Until
Fujinami, you
this,
know.
yeah.
And
And
also, yeah, it's like he was always there, you know, but it was just like it was his attitude that changed, and he became like his own man, and he formed his own faction within New Japan Pro Wrestling. Later on, he walked out with these 15 different, you know, his 15 guys, and moved to All Japan Pro Wrestling for 2 year period. But Rikki Choshu was very special, like a new type of Japanese heel.
Not really
I
heel,
thought.
just being
I
a little
mean,
bit
in American
against.
term, like establishment.
Yeah. Rebel, a little
Inoki
bit
and the company.
rebellious.
So challenging Inoki and Fujinami and the company kind of thing. And the perfect guys joined, you know, like people like Killer Khan. It's like he's a New Japan guy, but didn't fit, went to America and came back. You know, Yoshiaki Yatsu, or sometimes Masa Saito come back and join him. You know what I'm saying? Very perfect chemical.
Animal Hamaguchi.
Yeah,
The
pretty much.
non-traditional, not guys that wear just the black trunks and black boots, not young
Oh,
lions.
the costume. And also like people like Yoshiaki Yatsu had a Masa Saito costume, remember? The knee tights with Japan on it, you know, and the Japanese flag on the side.
Yeah, a lot of those
And
guys went to the States.
they wore that knee tights, we call them.
Even Rikki Choshu would wear those when he was in
In America he did. Actually, he borrowed Masa's tights in America. He didn't have one. And Masa just let him use his.
And even today, Masa Kitamiya still wears the
Oh yeah,
same type.
exactly the same. Yeah, so when you went to America, you gotta have that almost ugly knee tights, you know,
It's almost
and
like the
sometimes
uniform, yeah.
and barefooted sometimes. Yeah.
Sure.
And the previous generation, Umanosuke Ueda or somebody like that, or Kim Doc. Yeah. But Rikki Choshu was so modern and real long hair, and that's the first Japanese wrestler using clothesline, Rikki Lariat, you know, for finish. Yeah.
Big and
I
tough
don't, yeah,
compared
and
to.
I don't know how many times they did the Fujinami against Choshu, though, but every time he was good.
Well, they were doing it into their 50s and 60s, I do remember.
Until a couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah, just I think
So
even at
the, yeah,
the
but
retirement, like Rikki Choshu's last thing.
Fujinami against Choshu lasted over 30-year period. Oh my gosh. Yeah, 'cause when I was a kid, I did not understand that when you hear about in Detroit, they were doing the Sheik against Bobo Brazil for 30 years. How could a one match last 30 years, right? But you know, the Sheik, original Sheik
That one is
against Bobo
that one
Brazil.
was the last of its kind, I think, though, that Bobo Brazil Sheik rivalry, that's something that
Yeah,
lasted so
but
long.
think about Ric Flair against Dusty Rhodes, or the Harley Race against Dusty Rhodes. You know, they did that for like a good 20-year period. Yeah.
But those guys, they went around the states and had a tour of good shows. This what was amazing about Sheik and Bobo Brazil was it was in the same
Same place.
city. It was the
Yeah.
same, and it was pretty weekly too. Portland had a similar, what
Yeah.
is it? Like a
Northwest.
not momentum, but they didn't ha they would have that, and it's I guess it's not the same, but okay, regardless.
But sometimes it's this local feud, you know, just I don't want to say domestic, but your favorite matchup will last forever, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, for some reason, the D Detroit, Bobo Brazil, Sheik, it
Sheik,
worked
yeah.
forever, for a very long
Yeah,
time.
in Florida, you know, there's like Eddie Graham against Great Malenko, you know, Malenko's father. They did that for years and years of it. Yeah. Well, in the same way, Antonio Inoki against Taiga Jeet Singh, they did that for
Yes.
15 years, all year long. Well, Giant Baba and Abdul the Butcher, same, almost same content, same kind of match, but they did over and over and over and over. But this Rikki Choshu against Fujinami, the matches were always good. Yeah.
They
Then
were.
there's, okay, go ahead.
Oh no! I was just
I'm
gonna say.
listening.
No, they were. I was just gonna say they're very. Those matches, especially the first three, I think early on, were so like what's a like high. There's like a high tension to everything. It's a really high intensity, kind of like dramatic.
And actually, the one championship was at stake, WWF International title. There was such thing then. Fujinami came into Madison Square Garden as heavyweight in summer of '82 and beat wrestler Gino Brito and to become WWF International Champion, then brought the belt home. Then Rikki Choshu beat Fujinami to become WWF International Champion in Japan. They exchanged that in a little bit. But the title itself, the championship belt itself, wasn't all that important. The match itself, Rikki Choshu against Fujinami, was very, very important. Then after Rikki Choshu and his guys left, you know, for 2 years, joined All Japan as a Japan Pro Wrestling, and they did their program there. And Fujinami was still with New Japan, right? Then FM the UWF guys came back, you know, Maeda, the Takada, the Fujiwara, the Yamazaki, the Kido. Then there was a program, you know, there was a historical match in '85 that Akira Maeda against Fujinami match, double knockout. You know, with this Maeda spin kick that Fujinami cut his forehead and bleed, you know.
What was the
If you remember that
background on
one.
that? What was the background on that story?
Well, the Fujinami was there to take UWF guys, you know, because Fujinami himself is Korgach's student too. But the whole idea of UWF was to change professional wrestling and make it into legitimate contest. That was the whole theme of it. And 80s fan, really believed in UWF. Maeda Akira, that Akira Maeda and Nobuhiko Taka, those guys don't bounce off ropes. They don't do anything silly. And they don't do like a high drop kick or anything like that. They never fight outside the ring. They never do anything but wrestling. It's what Korogachi wanted. And Fujinami was there to take it. You know what I'm saying? That you need opponent, right? There was a match like Inoki against Fujiwara, but Inoki ended up beating Fujiwara. But Fujinami against Maeda, Fujinami was there to take it. You know, like, do this for me. Kind of like, he just observed. Yeah. And the made very sincere baby face once again, Fujinami was. Yeah. So he was after Riki Choshu. Yeah, he was there to have a single match against Maeda. And yeah, Fujinami was always there. In the meantime, around 85, it was Inoki against Brody time, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Inoki took, you know, Bruiser Brody came in from All Japan and there was a sensational news. And Inoki against Bruiser Brody, they did like 6-7 single matches in 1 year period. Not one finish, you know what I'm saying?
Of course. That was the style, both in New Japan and in Old Japan.
Yeah, I was there to watch it. The match was good, 20 minutes, and great match content, but they never gave clean finish then.
I mean,
do you think... DQ or double count out, or, you know, one get DQ, Inoki get DQ, or Brody get DQ, or double count out, or just no contest, or just... It was just, they never gave the conclusion. Yeah.
Which do you think if the booking was different back then, would it have had any effect on how popular the wrestling was?
I don't know. People always wanted to have the conclusion or a clean finish.
But they almost never got it until the 90s.
Right.
Until
right.
Misawa and...
Or the Three Musketeers.
Yeah, I mean, it would be until, yeah, in the early 90s when you get more definitive finishes more often.
Yeah, when Inoki left the company to be the politician and Riki Choshu became the booker and the locker room leader and stepped down from main event position. And he was, you know, Riki Choshu was a booker and the boss, in, you know, in the dressing room. So, the Keiji Muto, that the Shinya Hashimoto, that the Masa Chono, they were all 10, you know, 12 years younger than Riki Choshu, and just became like Riki Choshu became like a general, you know, surgeon that in the dressing room was like the baseball manager or football coach type, that he could tell wrestlers, you know, you all have finish.
Mm.
You would think that when Inoki left, you know, to be the politician, he would no longer travel with wrestlers, you would think, you know, that the booker position would be given to Fujinami, right?
Right.
But Inoki apparently gave the position to Riki Choshu instead.
Now, was Fujinami ever really focused on office positions or like management
later
positions?
Later on, he became, you know, the president of New Japan Pro Wrestling between 1999 and 2004. So for the 5 year period, he was a president of the company. But the locker room booking position, like a booker, that it was given to Riki Choshu by Inoki when he left, and it was not given to Fujinami. But I believe it was like more like a Riki Choshu was like a college jock fraternity house type that you can make guys shut up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Whereas Fujinami is like, he's like an athlete and his own man and doesn't really command or, you know, for the booker type, that Riki Choshu would be more likely your college, you know, dressing room, you know, locker room leader type, more so than Fujinami. Fujinami is a wrestler, and he does not bother other people. You know what I'm saying?
I think Choshu is more assertive. I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And Fujinami
tell people what
is
to
more,
do, what not to do.
Fujinami is more go with the flow, and he'll be okay. He, and I think both, you can be successful having both philosophies, but it's a personality trait, right? It's
Yeah, I think so.
and I to me I feel I'm just I don't know the statistic, but I feel like Fujinami was he stayed an active wrestler for longer than Choshu. Sort of stepped out of the spotlight and wasn't a seriously active wrestler for as long as Fujinami was.
After mid-90s,
Yeah, mid-90s and into the 2000s. It was Fujinami stayed relatively active until the presidency, the New Japan part, but I don't know.
Yeah, but before this Inoki leaving for the like public office, there we cannot forget this 1988 October that the August 8th. It's like 8888, 1988 August 8th. IWGP champion Fujinami and challenger Antonio Inoki in Yokohama.
This was the next chapter. This is where I kind of look at Fujinami's career
Yeah,
after the junior
finally,
heavyweight.
yeah, like Bloom as a heavyweight. There was like a Dragon Fujinami revolution that he challenged, finally challenged Inoki.
It had been about 10 years. It felt realistic. It felt like the right
And
time.
locker room, confrontation, which was videotaped, and he basically Fujinami left, country, and first he went to Portland and beat Grappler to become Pacific Northwest champion, if you remember. Then he brought in Kerry Von Erich, and 1988 he beat Kerry Von Erich in Tokyo. Korakuen Hall to become world-class world heavyweight champion and just start collecting belts. You know what I'm saying? And he was also UWA heavyweight champion in Mexico too. And a little bit later on, 91, there was a unification match IWGP champion Fujinami against then NWA world champion Ric Flair at the Tokyo Dome. In Japan, Fujinami beat Flair to become double champion.
That was a lot of Americans' introduction to Fujinami.
Fujinami, right.
Well, there's the first
Which
original era at
wasn't
MSG, but
exactly like his prime time physically, though.
no, that's the thing. Yeah, it's I mean, he had his first moments in Madison Square Garden, but that was a
Young
different.
Fujinami when he was 24,
But that was
so good.
but it was hard to it was hard for the whole world to see that. A big portion of the States got to see it, but wrestling on TV in the 70s, it was more regional still.
Sure.
Cable wasn't as prevalent, like,
No, not till 80s.
and
And
after
during
that, that's when Fujinami got the
Fujinami
chance.
was in Japan pretty much full time in his prime
Yeah,
time.
but I remember the special show with him and Flair very clearly back
Because
then.
it was like a Tokyo Dome era,
Yeah.
not the Sumo Palace, but it's like a big show being held at the Tokyo Dome, like a stadium size show.
Felt like a big, big
Pay-per-view
deal.
era.
A lot of WCW wrestlers on it, on the same card.
Starrcade in Tokyo. Yeah.
That had a famously confusing finish.
Right. And in Japan, Fujinami beat Flair and wore the belt. In American TV, that they got the belt back because there was a over-the-top rope DQ right before the finish, and the wrong referee counted. One or that. What's the referee's name? The later on ECW manager,
Bill Alfonso.
Alfonso, saw the over-the-top rope DQ, but instead that the Tiger Hattori came in and pinned that counted the three for Fujinami's pinfall. Yeah, so this is like a
All convoluted.
creative, very, very creative finish, I should
Yes.
say. But so in Japan, at the building, people left Tokyo Dome thinking that Fujinami conquered the world. Yeah,
How
but it
long did that
happened.
last?
Then there was a talk that he did go to Florida, for next pay-per-view, like a Super Brawl. And in Japan, it was called, that the rematch from Tokyo Dome. But in America, WCW pay-per-view Super Brawl, it was Ric Flair's title defense against Fujinami.
Presented differently.
Oh well, yeah. But Fujinami, going to Florida all by himself and had a single match against Flair one more time. It was good. Because Fujinami wasn't working WCW, was clearly outsider, but he had a main event position in WCW pay-per-view situation that they don't do that much, right? Usually WCW pay-per-view means like you have what the Lex Luger or somebody, right?
Sure.
Or Sting,
Sting, yeah.
but
Great
all of a
Muta.
sudden, all of a sudden Fujinami from Japan challenging Ric Flair for the main event, very special occasion.
It was big.
Yeah, I think so. But let's rewind a couple of years because we were talking about Antonio Inoki,
Right.
final single match against Fujinami, and this time Fujinami IWGP champion and Inoki was a challenger. And they did the 60-minute Broadway. Well, what's funny was though, see, Inoki let Riki Choshu beat him 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring, three different occasion, but you would think Fujinami would finally beat Inoki this time, right? But what they did was 60-minute Broadway.
Wasn't it really hot that day too in Yokohama? I guess something was that, yeah. I mean,
I was there though in the building.
what do you remember about it?
Well, see, when you have 60-minute, time, draw match, you could tell like a 20-minute in, they're gonna do this 60-minute,
You
right?
feel it.
Don't you think? Because they build the match so slow that they gotta go 60-minute, right? But this time they were doing a really tight wrestling match that it's like, wow, it's 30 minutes already, kind of thing. So 40 minute in, you could almost tell it's gonna be probably 60 minute. But then again, sometimes they do 45 minute or 50 minute, pinfall thing too. So it's like, I couldn't tell. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but they. What was funny was that if Fujinami will ever beat Inoki in single match situation, that must have been it, right?
It was supposed to be the moment. I think a lot of people expected that was going to be the time. That was it. Time was right.
So there's a lot of interpretation. Fujinami didn't want to beat Inoki. But it was like after the match almost didn't matter because this tired Inoki grabbed the championship belt, walked slowly to Fujinami and giving the belt back to Fujinami, right? And then
That was
put the
it.
belt around his waist. Thank you very much. It's so the torture is passed.
The torch was passed, everybody saw it, but Inoki gets to keep his record clean.
But sometimes, having 60-minute match against Inoki is more than beating him with clothesline.
Well, it says a lot about Fujinami's character. It says he can hang with the champ for at least 60 minutes.
He did pin Inoki one occasion. It was December of 1985, the night Bruiser Brody left the company.
Oh, that's right.
That was a
He stepped
tag team
in.
final. Tag team final that this is some argument with front office staff that they Brody and Snuka was on the bullet train going to Sendai. Then something happened and he got off the train and took another train back to Tokyo and changed hotel and left Japan without getting paid. That was it. But the main event was going to be Inoki Sakaguchi tag team against the tournament final Brody and Snuka, right? Then Brody and Snuka left, so they put Fujinami and Kengo Kimura, the third place tag team, as a final. Inoki Sakaguchi against Fujinami Kengo Kimura. Now that was a match Fujinami pinned Inoki with Dragon Suplex 1-2-3.
That was a big one. That was the first big win in the match for
Yeah,
Fujinami.
and almost everybody forgot what happened with Brody that night. Very
Good
smart
timing.
booking. But that was the only occasion that the 1988 August 8th IWGP Championship match, champion Fujinami against Antonio Inoki challenger, that was 60-minute broad, you know, Broadway, which was just as good as beating Inoki, is in my book. Yeah.
So from that point,
because it's a match they talk about to this date.
Would you say it's his most famous match, Fujinami?
Fujinami's match, yeah, because Fujinami himself talked about it, because he occupied Anthony Inoki all 460 minutes all to himself. It was a happy moment. I mean, don't let anybody touch him. It's like, I had Inoki for 1 hour all to himself. It's like, wow. So that's how Fujinami looks at it.
And from that point, it was kind of soon after that that Inoki would retire. And
retire, but didn't
slash
retire, but the
move into politics
and come back to maybe once or twice a year for Tokyo Dome situation, have very special single match, but not really full time ever again. Then Fujinami hurt his back during Vader match in June of 1989, following year. He had a herniated disc in his lower back, and it was Vader's match, and he took a year off, 89 to summer of 90. He was gone for the whole year. Yeah. But that's when Muto and Chono and Hashimoto really became main event. That's interesting,
The older generation was kind of out of the way.
Out of the way a little bit. And plus Kensuke Sasaki and Hiroshi Hase was, Ricky Choshu guy. So he was right under, not underneath, but like a fourth guy and fifth guy. It's like a five top guys.
Yeah, they were like the fourth and fifth musketeers.
Sort of, yeah. But they look main event, So Ricky Choshu didn't put himself in main event position again. Yeah. Then Fujinami came back, and in 91, and there was a Ric Flair match at the Tokyo Dome we just talked about. And he didn't retire, and then all in all, Fujinami ended up having fifth reign, like a five-time IWGP champion, right? And didn't quite have a full-time schedule again, but, he was a president of New Japan Pro Wrestling between 99 to 2004. Then he resigned and he formed a new company called Muga World Pro Wrestling. Muga means selflessness. Is that interesting? Well, so Muga is a Zen term, Zen Buddhism. Muga World the Pro Wrestling. Muga, selflessness. Interesting. Then they switched name to Tradition 2008 on. That's the company he still runs, like Fujinami office.
And that's run by his son, who's also a wrestler, Leona.
Yeah, Leona, yeah. They just had Fujinami's 50th year anniversary show, and he wanted to have a single match, and Hiroshi Tanahashi wanted to have a single match with Fujinami, yeah.
And
he did. Oh, okay. Also, yeah. Before I forget, yeah. Dragon Suplex, the Four Nelson, Suplex Hold, much like German Suplex, but the Four Nelson one, it was introduced by Fujinami, right? And Tope was introduced by Fujinami. And one more move, that the leg sweep, like a Dragon Screw, that the little bit later on, Muto brought in and then did do the leg sweep and do the figure four leg lock. That move.
Dragon Screw. Leg screw. Whip.
Yeah, leg whip. That was also introduced by Fujinami. So he's the father of Dragon Suplex. He's the father of Tope, Dragon Rocket. He was the father of Leg Sweep, Dragon Screw. Yeah. So he really introduced as an originator. Yeah.
Very important. Very.
And a little bit later on, Dragon Sleeper Hold.
Yep. All the dragon centric offensive moves. Yeah.
And also the one-handed backbreaker thing right before the Dragon Sleeper, like a Billy Robinson's backbreaker, but they call it Dragon Backbreaker. Moves are all original for him, yeah.
I think he might have had one of Vader's last matches, or I think Vader wrestled
on a tradition
show.
Yeah, after he was like losing it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Vader was brought in because Vera and Fujinami became friends over the years. And I interviewed Vera that, during his very last tour. And he was calling him Tatsumi, like a first name. Oh my gosh, like I never heard anybody call Fujinami with his first name,
Well, I don't know. I think maybe just a foreign guy thing.
Yeah, but Yo Tatsumi, friend.
It's probably a little shocking to hear at first.
From Leon White, yes.
Yeah.
The, during that tour, he already had this, dementia thing that he didn't know when he woke up he was in Japan, Yeah. But he was able to have a match, not single match situation anymore, but the six-man tag team situation. Beto was in it. They brought in Riki Choshu to work, six-man tag team. It's all senior, but Beto wanted to have his final match in Japan. That was in Fujinami's ring. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. That's right.
Yeah. And they did have a great match, though, like in 91, 92, when Vader was IWGP champion and Fujinami finally get his, title back from Vader. And it was a really good match. I was there in Hiroshima. Yeah. Hmm. Vader grew superstar in Japan. When he was brought in back in 1987 as a mystery opponent of Inoki, he was rather green, right? Hmm. But working full-time schedule with New Japan, quickly within 2 years or so, he became one of the biggest great worker, big giant wrestler.
Hmm.
Yeah.
For years after.
Yeah, and Fujinami was always his, favorite opponent.
Hmm.
Vader told me in person that Fujinami and I can do it like we can, we're dancing.
They have good chemistry, yeah.
Yeah, and then they apparently didn't even call match that much. It's doing and call each other in the ring,
just kind of improvised.
Yeah, like doing things almost intuitively.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's wrestler's chemistry, right?
Hmm.
So Fujinami was best opponent of Riki Choshu. Fujinami was best opponent of Vader. And he was great opponent for Anthony Inoki's matches. Not just once, but so many times. Yeah. Fujinami was there to make other wrestlers superstars all through his career. If you remember Fujinami against Keiji Muto, first year G1 tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That it took younger Keiji Muto 3 cradles to pin Fujinami.
He was still on top, and still one of those hard to pin dudes.
Yeah.
In the early 90s, he had a short little thing with Tenryu, didn't he? Around that time as well.
After Tenryu's WAR office pretty much closed down, and Tenryu became like an outsider and taking dates from New Japan's big shows. Yeah, mm-hmm. One at a time. Tenryu against Inoki, Tenryu against Choshu, then Tenryu against Fujinami because they never met. Yeah.
Mm. Dream match.
Yeah, dream matchup. Yeah, all through the years. So Fujinami is that kind of wrestler, star on his own, but he shined other superstars.
And even today, he was up to today. He's been wrestling all over, not just tradition. You see him in All Japan. You see him in New Japan, special occasions, on the Indies.
Special occasion, and of course, 68-year-old Fujinami doesn't do much. He just come in and then does his thing and leg sweep and does a sleeper hold, traditional sleeper hold into dragon sleeper hold, and he wrestles on the mat. A very minimum move, but he's still somewhat look like Fujinami. Yes.
Yeah. He recently, I saw him on NHK performing
that the Macho Dragon singing thing.
Yes, Macho Dragon, his old single. I suppose. What's the story with Macho Dragon? I guess if people aren't
that
familiar.
That was actually not a hit, but the single song that he recorded in the 80s. But the NHK brought in one hit wonder show. that you bring in him and let him have him sing the same song, you know, 30 years later
yeah,
with
that
the same
was
costume.
Maybe over the summer.
Yeah, over this summer, yeah.
Yeah,
it was interesting. You know, people watched it, you know.
Yeah, it's
so
in celebration
in general
of
public,
his...
It was like a Fujinami's outside the wrestling, but they're like he had a one-hit wonder too. They did play that music at the building, you know, last week, though, Fujinami's 50th anniversary show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. With his, you know, the famous pink jacket. Yeah.
He had the famous pink, kind of like a bomber jacket.
Yeah.
He had the headband.
But this time, he did, you know, this 50th anniversary show this last week. Fujinami was wearing something like Inoki would wear, the kimono gown. Yeah. And he did come out with the Inoki Bonmae music too. So they played all the historical, his theme music. From eight, you know, first Dragon Suplex music to Macho Dragon music to early 90s music to the recent music to Inoki's music. Like they mixed the, you know, entrance music, and it was like it was interesting just to hear the entrance music, and brought in you know, Hide Tanaka, ring announcer, old ring announcer from New Japan days, and had him, you know, called, you know, in the ring.
And
also, yeah, because they brought in Kitazawa, they brought in Chono, the Fujiwara, Choshu, and Muto in the ring to celebrate it.
It was like high school reunion.
Yeah, like alumni, yeah. So New Japan's just 50-year, you know, history was right there. It's just like a very happy moment. Yeah. Current New Japan is really big and huge, but the New Japan's, you know, older fans will always think about, you know, when you think, say, New Japan's, like, of course, Inoki or Sakaguchi, or, you know, of course, Fujinami, Choshu, Fujiwara, then Muto and Chono. Hashimoto is not with us anymore, but you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's just the history is there.
Yeah, he was a big part, and he was a connecting part, because, like we said, he hasn't retired. He's been there since,
right?
And he's been there before.
Beginning of
before the whole Three Musketeers generation, and still there.
Yeah, the Fujinami in 20s, Fujinami in 30s, Fujinami in his 40s, Fujinami in his 50s. Now he's what, 68? Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
You know,
just wrestled Hiroshi Tanahashi last week.
You would think, yeah. No. Single match against Hiroshi Tanahashi. Of course, he loses with his high five flow, but of course, it's just his athlete. But he didn't look all that bad, no.
It's you don't feel like you're watching the Ric Flair retirement. It's a little more
dangerous. Let's go there, yeah.
It was I feel more comfortable or more safe watching Fujinami in this condition.
And also, he doesn't wear a t-shirt in the ring.
No, he looks good. I mean, for 68, geez.
Yeah.
I think many males would like to look like that when they're 68.
Yeah, and he'll turn 69 like in a couple weeks.
Amazing.
Oh my gosh. He was only 24 when he came back from Madison Square Garden. So it's like, I've been watching him over 40 years. Oh my gosh.
He's going to have debuted before Keiji Muto and will retire after Keiji Muto.
After Keiji Muto.
His whole career.
Right. Yeah. So he's like that. Yeah. Who can you compare him to in, like, in America? Much like Ric Flair, but...
It's tough because I can't immediately think of somebody that was... First off, a junior heavyweight, and kind of switched the perception.
That's right.
His character, and he became a heavyweight, big time champion.
And the wrestler against, you know, American superstars, and wrestlers against Japanese superstar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fujinami had all kinds of different matches. Yeah,
I think it's easiest to compare him to Inoki, but he's also not like Inoki,
right?
Maybe like a mix of Inoki and a Billy Robinson.
Yeah, and a little bit of Karagacha, of course.
Yeah, and he did wear the black boots with the white socks.
Yeah. Nothing writing on the back. Yeah. Just plain black trunks, always. Not even the knee pads.
Yeah, it's hard to I don't know if he has any peers or people to compare him to. Even his peers like Riki Choshu were actually so different from him.
Yeah, then Ricky Choshu made sure that his boots is always white boots. Yeah, always.
Different than Fujinami.
Right. Black trunks though, and Ricky Choshu became star with his long hair too, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. Fujinami's hair was always short, clean cut.
Yeah, Fujinami's still going.
Yeah.
And if I think
Okay.
if people want to
I think
watch
we
that,
covered, yeah, it's like we just, you know, was talking, just go back and forth. It's like, it was all 70s stories into 80s and all of a sudden 90s, but we went back to 80s and now 2000s and all of a sudden 2022, you know. But yeah, I don't think it was possible to, you know, go through Fujinami's all 50 years career in 1 hour podcast. But I just wanted to give this feeling that we watched him. Yeah.
Yeah, and that he's still there.
Yeah.
So let's enjoy him while he's still with us. Not like he's
And
going
also
anywhere.
the type, no, and also type of wrestler that you go back to New Japan World, you know, streaming service and watch his match from the 80s and you can study.
Oh yeah. The
Yeah.
Choshu matches, the matches with Dynamite Kid and Chavo Guerrero,
And
Estrada,
also, yeah,
Canek.
Fujinami against Bob Backlund a couple of times.
Or
Yeah.
him versus the young UWF guys and like
Oh, yeah.
Takada and Maeda.
Especially Maeda. Yeah.
I think what made him special is how he never really had to change anything about himself. The situation would be so
Yeah, and had a
drastically
different type of
different.
opponent and still had Fujinami match.
And he always had a interesting, authentic, charismatic reaction to what he was doing in
Selling,
the ring, to selling, to getting into it. That's one of the fun parts of watching Fujinami was to see how into it he would get. He's a fired up dude. He's a fired up, like in Inoki, that same kind of energy. You know what I mean?
And very interesting to be babyface only for 50 years.
But when you watch him for a long time, you couldn't think of him as anything else.
Right.
Like,
Well, because most
it's hard
wrestlers
to.
go back and forth, you know, and yeah.
You know, he's consistent. He's like a maybe like a John Cena in some ways.
Probably,
That
yeah.
might
But
sound
John
crazy to
Cena had
some,
denim
but
on, though.
yeah,
Yeah, very similar to John Cena position
not a
in the
comparison
costume.
to the wrestling skill or anything like that, but what they represent or
Yeah, consistency.
the
Yeah.
consistency and the I guess like l people are extra loyal to these wrestlers. They're
And the
really.
connection,
Yeah,
like a non-verbal connection with
very
live
deep
crowd.
connection. Yeah, I think
Yeah, audience.
actually maybe Tanahashi might be the best comparison.
Sure. But Tanahashi has flashy costume.
That's the Tanahashi has. There's a comparison of the basic, the fundamentals are similar, but Tanahashi has his own, not only his own career but his own flavor that he added
Of
to
course,
his
and he's a
persona.
cool looking guy, superstar look, gray hair dude,
He's like a
all
rock
these
and roll
things.
guy.
Yeah. Well, the air guitar. But the Fujinami was always bread and butter,
Yeah.
basic bread and butter guy. And he might be the last one, huh?
I guess so.
Yeah, to be that. Yeah, it's like
Is Fujiwara still active?
yeah, he's in fact, tonight I'm going to Fujiwara's 50th anniversary show.
What? Oh, is that at Korakuen?
Run by Satoru Sayama, original Tiger Mask. And
Oh.
also Toi Ishikawa's 30th anniversary show.
Who's scheduled to be on that show?
Wow. A lot of the different that those are the names, but the original Tiger Mask's got, you know, strong style pro wrestling guys, and the Tiger Queen, you know, the female Tiger Mask
Oh, is this
wrestler
the
there.
tradition show?
It's not a tradition.
Or
It's
the Tiger Mask
strong,
one.
yeah, strong
Strong
style
style
pro
pro wrestling.
wrestling. Yeah. Tonight, I'm going there tonight. Yeah.
Sometimes it's called real, like a real pro wrestler.
They changed it.
Right, right.
Real Japan,
Real
but
Japan,
they
that's right.
switched the company structure and they recently renamed the company S Strong Style,
Strong
so
Style Pro.
SSPW. Yeah,
Yes.
Strong Style Pro Wrestling. run by Satoru
Sayama.
Sayama, the original Tiger Mask.
That's right. I see.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. So it's a different kind of flavor. It's like almost like a early 70s New Japan type of atmosphere. Yeah.
With
Yeah.
some of the wrestlers from that era in the building with you.
Yeah, I think so. And who's seven, like a 76-year-old Fujiwara still be doing the submissions and headbutts.
That's all. That's all everybody wants.
Yeah. Interesting, huh? Because Fujiwara, the submission master Fujiwara's, debut opponent was Fujinami. Yeah.
And he did
50
factor
years ago.
in, yeah. And when we talk about Choshu and Fujiwara had their own relationship too, and
Sure,
he's a
sure.
part of that early 80s breakout in early New Japan
Yep,
for
yep.
sure. We'll probably have to do
And
an
they.
episode on him someday.
Fujiwara, of course, well, let's do that. Yeah. And also, what they all have in common, one time or another, Fujiwara, Fujinami, Riki Choshu, they all carried the Inoki's suitcase for a while. Yeah, there's Riki Dozan tradition.
And all connected in some different ways, but to Karl Gotch.
Yes, definitely. So it's more interesting if you dig through these, the relationships and how they turned out. Yeah.
I think so.
Influences. Yeah. Okay.
All right, let's wrap it right there. That's Tetsumi Fujinami. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's
If
good. I
anybody
think
want to know
so.
anything, if anybody have more question on Fujinami's career or anything, we'll answer these questions. The next week will be Riki Dozan's memorial, so let's do the Riki Dozan episode.
That'll be very good, and part one of probably do two of those on Nikki
Yeah,
Dozan.
yeah.
But if people
Holiday special.
holiday special, that's right.
Yeah.
If people want to ask questions about Tatsumi Fujinami or anything else, where can they
Or
reach
anything
you?
on Japanese wrestling.
Yeah,
Yeah.
where can we reach you?
On Twitter, at Fumihiko Dayo, FumihikoDayo, Fumihiko Dayo on Twitter, or just Fumi Saito on Facebook.
And on Twitter, I'm at Justin M. Nipperkin, IPPER. You can reach us there, ask questions. And I guess until next week, Fumi, take it away.
So long from Tokyo.
Write that down.